This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. It's coffee corner time, people. Today we'll be answering your listener questions about the futures of Rico Lewis and John Stones, wondering whether or not Nathan Ake is underrated in the wider football sphere, and asking what might come up for City in the summer transfer window. I'll be joined by YouTube sensation Hugh Murray to discuss just that. It's Wednesday, the 1st of May. I'm Amos Murphy, and this is the City Report Podcast.
It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Crowd.
Welcome back to the Coffee Corner. With me today is Dublin's finest, Hugh Murray. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, Hugh. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for having me on. Always great to be on the City Report podcast. One of my favourite in the Man City space.
Love that, love that. Sweetening us up already. It's what you want to say. listeners, if you are new here, you should know. If you are new here, then you won't know. But regular listeners, you'll know the premise of the Coffee Corner. It's basically where we take your listener questions and we answer them. Hugh, we'll start with this one then. It comes from Kieran, and it's a non-football related question to kick things off. They've asked us what we're watching at the moment. Netflix, Disney Plus, YouTube, movies, whatever it might be. Are there any good TV or film suggestions from the City Report podcast?
So there's two I watched recently. I'm not a massive film TV kind of guy, but there's two I watched recently. One is kind of football related and one's not. The first one, it's the Jeffrey Dahmer one. I know it's out a long time, but it's my missus said to me, you have to watch it.
Are you
it.
Into that stuff? The weird psycho killer, murder mystery sort of stuff?
Kind of, I guess. Have you seen that Baby Reindeer one that's on Netflix at the minute?
Weird. It's so weird.
I know. So I watched both of them. So that's three, actually. I watched Baby Reindeer, I watched the Jeffrey Dahmer. I recommend them if you're not, you know, soft-hearted and you can handle a bit of gore and gruesome kind of activities. But the kind of football-related one is I watched a movie that came out in 2016, the Pelé movie. It's an actual film about Pelé. I don't know if you've seen it, and you know his childhood right up to winning the World Cup at 17 years of age with Brazil and the trials and tribulations that come with, you know, coming from essentially a favela in Brazil and the style of football that Brazil tried to play at that point in the 1950s, you know, the kind of samba style of play, which is actually called Jinga, apparently, was frowned upon after they lost the first World Cup. Yeah, it was frowned upon. They lost the first World Cup to Uruguay in 1950, of course, in the final. And they were like, no, we can't play with this style of football anymore. And Pele was like, look, it's all I know. It's the way I'm going to play. All his coaches said, don't do that. Don't do that. You have to go and watch it. It's a fantastic storyline, well created. But yeah, that's where I'm at, man.
I love that. Bring in the knowledge. It's what we want to see. I can't handle the murder stuff. I watched Baby Reindeer. It was one of those things. I put it on, and the first 10 minutes, I just felt uncomfortable. But I powered through it, and yeah, really, really weird sort of show.
You know what's mad about that one? I don't know if you know, but the guy who acts out the main character, it's the guy. It's the real guy in real life.
No way.
It's him. It's his own experiences. It's the same guy.
Oh God, that makes it even weirder, doesn't it? Fair play. I mean, it's some story. Listeners, if you're into that, then go off and watch it. It's really well done. It's just uncomfortable. I've been I did recently watch The Bear though, on Disney Plus. It's a two season show. It's about a little restaurant in Chicago, actually, and that was really, really good, superbly done. One of those things that you can just tell a lot of effort has gone into making it. It's just visually fantastic. In terms of films, I'm a bit like you. I'm not really a massive film person, but I did watch In the Land of Saints and Sinners this weekend. I think it's recently dropped on Netflix. It's based in Ireland, actually, the north of Ireland. It's got Liam Neeson in it. It's from the 1970s, I think. It's like this really rural village on the west coast of Northern Ireland, and they're chasing after some IRA cell. It sounds brutal, but it's quite funny. It's quite sort of lighthearted. So that's what I'd suggest. Apart from, of course, on YouTube, HMTV, obviously, Hugh Murray TV. That's what you should be watching, listeners.
Blockbuster stuff, man. I'm telling you, Hollywood, roll out the red carpet. But yeah, man, I must check out that one that you're talking about on Disney Plus.
Yeah, The Bear's superb. Really, really good. Enjoyed that one. Okay, then let's do football related chat. And we've got a question. It comes from Jack Brown, and it says, a question for the coffee corner. If Nathan Ake had more of a personality in the media, brackets, not saying he doesn't, do you think he'd be more highly regarded? I think personally he's a massively underrated player for what he's done for us. I think he's top two or three defenders in the league. Would be good to see what you guys think. Love the pod. Keep it up. Up the Blues. Thank you for that, Jack. I'll pass it over to you, Hugh, because we spoke about this after the Forest game on the show in sort of a little bit, and I wanted to go into more depth about it because his performances, I'd say, Jesus, even going back to last season, have just been top draw.
It's a really good question, and I think it's one that does have to be spoken about. And it's not just Nathan Ake. I mean, I know this question is about him, but it kind of goes with a number of our players who perform very well and don't get the praise they deserve, don't get the recognition they deserve. The one I've been harping on about for weeks and weeks and weeks on my channel was Foden, of course, and that's not a surprise because us as City fans were appreciating what he's doing. But I was saying things like, you know, the wider media and the footballing world aren't giving Foden the praise he deserves for the level he's playing at. Just saying, oh, he deserves to start for England and this kind of rubbish is not justified praise. This guy's playing at a world-class level. And then my next one was Josko Vardy. I'm like, look, this guy's come into Manchester City, you know, at a big price tag, a really young guy. I think people really, you know, disregard how young Vardy is.
To be fair, he looks like he's about 30, doesn't he? Like, he's built.
He's a handsome guy. He's a handsome guy.
Yeah,
handsome guy.
He's what, 21, 22, something daft like that?
I think he might be 22 now. He's really young, man. He's really young. He's come in playing a new role, a new position it's not his natural habitat, a left back, and he's adapted really well. He's grown into it so fast. And I'm saying on Twitter and I'm saying online that, you know, Josko Vardiol deserves praise. And people are saying, oh, well, you know, it's what he should be doing. He came in at a high price. I'm like, well, you're not doing that for Declan Rice. You know what I'm saying? Declan Rice is the best thing since sliced bread now, and he costs it even more than Josko Vardy.
Best thing since microwaved rice, you could say instead.
And then, of course, you look at Nathan Ake, who I believe he was probably our most consistent performer throughout the course of the whole treble-winning campaign. If you remember before Christmas, when it was a little bit topsy-turvy, you know, a bit up and down, consistent-wise and overall performances, Ake was one of those players that was consistently dropping 7.5, 8 out of 10 every single week. I remember going to Old Trafford, losing, was it 2-1, the Rashford dodgy goal?
Yeah, 2-1.
Ake solid. There was plenty of games where Ake was solid. And my thought process is, look, yeah, I don't even think it's personality driven. If he had more personality, he'd get more attention or praise. I think it's if he was wearing a different color shirt. I think people just have come to a subconscious feeling of, all City players just must be good, and it's just what they do. So it kind of eradicates any possibility of pinpointing certain individuals and going, you know what? No, they're doing a really, really good job. But it's just because, oh, they play for City, it's what they do. It's doing their thing. I mean, if he was wearing a red shirt, I believe this, call me conspiracies and that, but wearing an Arsenal, Liverpool, or United shirt, I think the whole world is going, wow, Nathan Ake from relegation Bournemouth for 40 million. What a steal.
We're seeing that, aren't we, with Gabriel, basically, because I this personally, I might be wrong, I might be right, I don't know, but I think the Arsenal back line, the star, the gem in that defence is Saliba. And Gabriel is, don't get me wrong, a decent centre-back, but we're hearing best in the league shouts. And fair enough, the partnership is probably the best in the league. But in terms of an individual, I reckon Arsenal could probably improve on Gabriel personally. He's a bit shaky, you know, he puts himself about, fair enough, but he's not a world beater. However, that praise that you do see, and like you say, we sound like conspiracy theorists, we might be, but when you have City winning title after title after title, there is this sort of subconscious realisation or opinion that, you know, City just naturally have these good players in every position, which isn't necessarily true. But what Nathan Ake has done, because was it the start of last season, he rejected a move to Chelsea. Chelsea were hot on him. They really, really wanted them. City basically said £50 million. I don't know whether or not a bid was submitted. I can't quite remember. But Nathan Ake was never sort of pushing for that at all. And look, he's reaping the rewards. Where would you put him right now in terms of City's best defenders? I know John Stones has had a little bit of a wobble. We'll speak about him, actually. We've got another question coming up. Ruben Diaz has been in and out of the team, be that through illness, injury, fitness, you know, whatever, or just not being preferred. It feels like Nathan Ake, when fit, is the guy, especially now in central defence, centre of defence, because obviously Gvardiol has emerged as that left back, so to speak.
I think Ake is definitely recently been absolutely fantastic. But I think over the course of this season, I have to give the flowers to Akanji. I think Akanji has been underrated, underappreciated, gone under the radar, whatever you want to call it. He's just so consistent, Akanji, so consistent. I can't think off the top of my head this season or last season, really any games where I left the ground or I turned off the TV going, geez, Akanji had a stinker today. Do you know what I mean? Akanji was really, really poor. And it's the fact that he can play anywhere across the back four. I know he does the stepping into midfield sometimes like John Stones, and I prefer Stones at it personally, but I think Akanji can do it. I think Akanji has proven he can do it. But it's a throw up between Akanji and Ake for me as two just consistent warriors. Do you know what I mean? Always at a certain level, a certain standard. They rarely drop below a certain level. And then you look at Akanji, the business we did for him, you know, 15 to 17 million, whatever it was, came in as a fifth choice, more than likely. Probably didn't think he was going to play. Career at Dortmund was at a bit of a stalemate. You know what I mean? It was kind of plateaued and so on. Needed a new lease of life, and he's come into Man City. And since he's walked through the door, I think Akanji has been, he's been fantastic. It's one of the best pieces of business in the Pep Guardiola era for me, Akanji.
Yeah, and they almost fell upon it, didn't they? Because obviously, Aymeric Laporte's injury was worse than first expected. He was going to be out until the sort of the winter time. Was it deadline day or just before deadline day? City go out and snatch this defender from Dortmund. And look, again, it goes back to that sort of the original point of not getting enough praise. Any team in the Premier League could have probably done that. You know, it wouldn't have been a surprise had West Ham, had Fulham, had God knows, you know, even moving up the table, Liverpool, Man United, signed Akanji. You know, a move to the Premier League probably would have taken him. Not much persuasion. He comes to City, he takes a gamble, City pay 15, 16 million pounds, whatever it was. And suddenly, you know, again, he's been crucial in two seasons now, hopefully two Premier League winning campaigns. And yeah, just to round it off, Nathan Ake, sensational. We've been banging that drum for a good while. He probably does need maybe another season, especially in the sense of defence, to sort of go into that upper echelon of Van Dijk. Possibly he's going to drop off, and there's something to be seen in the European Championships at the Netherlands, who sort of, especially with Mickey van der Ven, who really marshals that defence. But yeah. Wonderful player. We've had another question about City's defence. It comes from Wayne, and it's a little bit more of a bleak one, and understandably so. They ask us, what's John Stones' future looking like at City? He's a superstar when fit, one of City and England's main men. Problem is, he isn't fit all too often. He turns 30 in the summer, has 2 years left on his contract. Does he get another renewal, or will City have to move move away in due course. God, that last line is it's not what you want to hear, is it? You don't want to be thinking about City without John Stones. But I guess City have proven themselves as ruthless operators in the transfer market. There's a question to be had, isn't there, going into the summer?
There is. I think we're all very sentimental over John Stones. We all love John Stones. You only have to go to one game, the Etihad, and you come away knowing the place adores John Stones. You know, his name is forever, even when he's not on the pitch, ringing around the stadium. But it is true, and it's an uncomfortable conversation because, look, I get this a lot on shows I do with rivals, and I'm always bigging up John Stones, always talking about, you know, what a Rolls Royce of a footballer he is. And they'll come back with stats and say, well, he's only played 20 to 25 games a season for the last three, four seasons, which it reeks of unreliability, and I get that. And I think Pep has probably weighed up the pros and cons over the years of his injury list with John Stones and the ongoing issues he has, and said, look, the 24, 25 games you do get out of John Stones makes it worth keeping John Stones. But look, I mean, in the last few weeks, we've seen, I don't know if you've seen reports over City are very interested, or they like the look of that Brantwaite at Everton. A lot of Everton fans believe he is the next John Stones. I'm a fan of Brantwaite. I like him, and I think he's got a very high ceiling. I don't know. Are City on the same wavelength? Do they think Brantwaite is possibly the next?
He's probably one of those players, isn't he? A little bit like Guardiola in the summer, where if they become available, City have to make themselves the number one destination because. Yeah. Look, it's possibly too early to say, but he does look like he's already been called up to the England squad. He hasn't made his debut yet, but it looks like he's going to be the guy for the next 10 years, a little bit like Guardiola. Similarly left-footed, so that'll be interesting to see. But it would be an uncomfortable question to be had, doesn't it? Because it's interesting, you mentioned the numbers of his appearances. This is in the Premier League alone. He's only made 15 appearances in the Premier League for City this season so far, 23 last year. Obviously, that was one of his better seasons in terms of fitness. He's not made more than 27 appearances in the Premier League for City since he joined, and that was in his first season, 2016-17. Other than that, he's been capped at 23-24. He did 33 for Everton in his final season with them, but I didn't realise until you mentioned it just how little football he has played, relatively speaking.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, it's as black and white as John Stones is a very injury-prone player. But as I said, I think Pep and the team weigh up the pros and cons that come with it. I mean, I want to get your opinion. If City were to decide they want to go all in on Brantwaite and they're happy to part ways with John Stones, what kind of figures do you think are adequate to demand for John Stones?
That's a really difficult question, isn't it? Because, look, if I was in charge of City, I wouldn't let John Stones go at all. But no. I wouldn't have let Fernandinho go. I wouldn't have let Vincent Kompany go. I wouldn't have let Sergio Aguero go. You know, these guys in the boardroom, they don't operate in that sort of, like we say, sentimental mentality. I would say, oh God, I'm trying to think. What was Gabriel Jesus? Around 40 million quid. Now, obviously, different players, different positions, different sort of points in their career. But I think if City were going to pull the plug on him, they'd probably take between 40 and 50. I don't. To be fair, though, I don't know who sort of pays that, because you're just going to have to say City have got the best backroom staff in terms of fitness, in terms of injury, in terms of sort of recovery in world football, probably. You just look at how little games Haaland has missed. I know he's had an injury sort of crisis a little bit this season, but at Dortmund, he was out every other week. So you go to a different club, he's going to be expected to play more. There isn't going to be as much rotation. They're going to be playing big bucks to bring him into the team. You know, I don't know if there is the market now, which sounds bonkers because on his day, he's probably one of the greatest defenders of all time. And that sounds over the top, but it's true.
I agree. I think ability-wise, of course, and I think his accolades, both personally and with the team, speak for themselves. You know what I mean? The guy's he's one of the best in the Premier League era, for sure. But I think if anybody's to come in for John Stones, they're saying, can we build, if we're going to spend that money on John Stones, can we build our defence around John Stones? And then the reliability comes back into the equation. Is he reliable enough to build your defence around, or the spine of your team, even around John Stones? I'm not so sure. So I don't think he's going anywhere, personally. I don't think he's going anywhere. And I want him to stay, absolutely, of course. I love John Stones, but it's one of those things that I think City fans appreciate him a lot more than the rest of world football.
Yeah, which seems to be a theme from today's show anyway. It's probably a question, isn't it? Maybe next summer, if he has another similar campaign where he plays 15, 16 games in the Premier League, doesn't really sort of lay down that position again, is suffering with injuries, he'd then be 31. City could possibly look at it next season and go, yeah, okay, maybe now's the time, because then he would be in the last year of his contract. But I think he's safe for now, but probably a big season ahead for him next year. Okay, that'll do for part one. We'll be back in a moment after this short break for part two.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast. Now, Hugh, this is a question from me. I had to get it out there because you and I have come to blows many a times over this issue. Who is a bigger band in terms of worldwide recognition? Is it Oasis or is it U2? Now, this is ironic because in the Manchester corner is the Dublin boy, and in the Irish corner is the Manchester boy. So you are adamant that Oasis, worldwide, not just England, not just the UK, not just Europe, worldwide, Oasis are the bigger band.
You've handcrafted this just because I was coming in, haven't you?
Absolutely.
I don't know what your demographic is like for your listeners and what age ranges we kind of deal with in the City Report podcast, but I think the older crowd will not like me saying it's Oasis because you two, of course, are huge. But just from it's Oasis. It's Oasis. They just impact culturally a lot more. You know what I mean? They paved the way for so many bands. Everyone wants to be like Oasis. Everyone wants to be like Liam Gallagher. No one wants to be like Bono. You know what I mean?
That's true. I take that point. I was coming at it more from a sort of just worldwide recognition, because there are a lot of boring people in the world, and Liam Gallagher isn't everyone's cup of tea. And speaking of which, we do have a lot of US listeners. They never made it that big over there. They never cracked the US scene. They didn't necessarily sort of get into the zeitgeist with the US audiences, which is interesting. But you doubling down, Oasis, 100%.
Look, I'm saying a band that could have sold out Nebworth 250,000 people 7 times over, I'm not arguing with that, mate. Oasis.
U2 opened the Las Vegas Sphere thing. Sphere, what's it called? Is that it? The big dome thing? I don't know. It looks awful.
Just that mad lights and all that stuff. Yeah.
I think they were the first band to open that. So look, listeners, let us know. I had to chuck that in there because, like I said, we have come to blows numerous times over that, and I'm sure it will continue. This is a City question. It comes from Charlie H. They've asked us, what does Rico Lewis's role look like for City next season and going beyond? Big money midfielders are being linked to the club. He's not seen as a true right back, and his versatility is almost his downfall in that he's not pinned down one position yet. That's an interesting part. I mean, the question is almost split into two parts, isn't it? What does Rico Lewis's season look like next year? And then sort of going beyond that, does the transfer sort of market City you're operating in influence it? And then his versatility is his downfall. Can he then pin down one position? I'll hand the floor to you. But another interesting one. It seems to be very defensive focused today.
Yeah, look, see, City operate on a very unique way when it comes to players that have come up through the academy. And I always view it as there's a progression plan outlined from very early with how this player can graduate from the academy, to being the next Phil Foden, who is now a starting player, one of the first names of the team sheet. How does he go from A to B in that sense? And there's a lot of learning and development and patience required to do that. You know what I'm saying? And we've seen loads of players not show the patience. Brahim Diaz, Cole Palmer, Jadon Sancho. I think with Rico Lewis, the idea that he needs to nail down a position is it's not the time for that yet. I don't think it's the time for that yet. I think with Rico Lewis, it's more the same. It's as you were. Continue to be, you know, there and enthusiastic and show the hunger levels and perform when you're called upon. Show your versatility. I mean, when Phil Foden was at this stage of his development, that Rico Lewis is at now, Phil Foden, no one could tell us what position Phil Foden was. We all knew through the academy he was a midfielder or a 10, but we were seeing him play left wing, right wing, the odd time in midfield, false nine at times. And Pep was just saying, go out there and develop, go out there and learn, go out there and enjoy. But when you get to 23, 24, 25, then we will start to look at, right, where can we make you a specialist? Where can we make you a home? And I think that's where Rico Lewis is at. We know he can step into midfield. We know he can play as an eight. We know he can play as a right back. And there's probably plenty more ideas Pep has in his locker for Rico Lewis that we're not even aware of right now. So I think the next thing for Rico next season is just more minutes. Simple as, more minutes. Wherever you're told to play, keep performing the way you have been. He's magnificent. He's totally magnificent, man. The fact that he played little or no football from January right up to the last month or two and then comes in and puts in the performances he did. I think there's a perfect progression plan for Rico and Pep's doing a really good job with him.
Yeah, I totally agree. Pretty much echoing those statements there. He's already gone over the amount of Premier League appearances he made last season. He got 14 all in all. He's on 15 now. You'd expect that, even if it's just substitute appearances, to increase over the next couple of weeks. And look, I when the conversation about even this season, Phil Foden needs a position. He needs to be playing central midfield. He needs to be either a wing. You know, I'd be like, let the guy just have that freedom. And it's a little bit different, isn't it, in the defence, because typically speaking, and this probably is a conversation after Guardiola leaves, there isn't that fluidity in a back line. You're not going to have your right back drifting over into sort of left wing. You know, you get the point. Whereas if Foden's playing left wing, he can drift inside, he can go down the line, whatever. But I totally agree. I mean, more than anything, just the guy's mentality seems to be pinpoint. And it might be interesting. I know there's a little talk about Frimpong from Leverkusen. Should he come in then? Does that sort of stunt Rico Lewis's progression? Akanji's been fantastic. Can he go another season not being a main guy in that starting 11? We've seen him as the widest right player. Kyle Walker's future as well. So, let's, for example's sake, say City go out and purchase a midfielder, as we expect them to, and then maybe they delve into the right-back market. Frimpong, was it like 35 million quid or something like that being touted for him? Does that then present an issue for him if it's another guy coming in front of him? Or is it still a case of, as you were, wherever you play, sort of plug and play, basically?
I would definitely be disappointed if I was Rico Lewis and City went and bought Frimpong. Absolutely, I'd be disappointed if we went and bought Frimpong. I mean, they're similar ages, Frimpong, Frimpong and Rico Lewis. Frimpong's still really, really young. I've watched a lot of Frimpong. I watched Frimpong when he was in the City Academy. I watched him a lot when he was at Celtic. My dad's a Celtic fan, and I've kept a good eye on Bayer Leverkusen this season. Rico's a better player than Frimpong. I firmly believe that. Rico has a higher ceiling than Jeremy Frimpong. Frimpong is the exciting name on the scene right now because he just won a Bundesliga with Bayer Leverkusen, and all credit to him for that. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely fantastic achievement. But I think people get excited over buying players who are from abroad and that kind of thing, rather than right under our noses, we have an unbelievable talent in Rico Lewis who is chipping away. He's learning under the guidance of Pep and the players around him. But if we went and bought Frimpong, I think it's an unnecessary purchase. I think with Rico Lewis there, he should be next in line. Like I said, I think Rico's a better player all around and has a higher ceiling. So, look, I think the difficult conversation in this really is Kyle Walker. It's what's left with Kyle Walker. How much longer does Kyle Walker have left? At a high level, I'm not so sure based on his performances this season. I think it's probably been his most difficult season, both on and off the pitch, since he signed for Manchester City. When he does eventually move on, or City decide, Kyle Walker's time is finished, there's an avenue there for Rico to stamp his authority. So I wouldn't want a Frimpong. I wouldn't want anybody else coming in and taking that from Rico. I think Rico is him.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to agree. He's 19 years old. He doesn't turn 20 until November 2024. So, you know, he's still sort of going to be a teenager well into next season. And patience can be the virtue for these players. We saw it with Phil Foden. Do you think City made a... I don't want to do this discussion again, but I just said it then. It reminded me about sort of an unnecessary purchase. And I'm not for a second saying Doku was an unnecessary purchase, but we saw a similar thing happen with Cole Palmer, where it looked like he was going to have a bigger season. I don't think he even gets close to the 20 odd goals he scored for Chelsea. If he gets the sort of, if he stays at City, he might get 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. But do you think that they maybe have to then learn from the mistake there, seeing how well Palmer has done since he left, that you bring someone in, okay, fair enough, they might be the new toy, the shiny new toy that you want to get out of the transfer market in Europe, but you sometimes have to look closer to home. And I think that's certainly the case here with Rico Lewis, that he could maybe be, because of that, bringing it back to the question, because of the versatility he offers and hasn't yet got down that one specific position, City might look at going out and getting a right back, should Kyle Walker then sort of move back to Bayern, go to Bayern Munich, as we've heard this week. You know, there is an issue, isn't there, that City could maybe balls this one up again.
Yeah. I'd like to think they don't, but I think, yeah, just the closer to home thing is, it has to be taken into consideration. I mean, if any young player is able to graduate from our academy and Pep wants them in the squad, there's something about them. Do you know what I mean? They're a really, really good player who Pep really, really likes. And we've heard in the last couple of weeks that with Palmer, Pep was asking him for 2 years to stay. I've got, like I said, I've got a plan for you. I've got a progression plan for you and the way I see your career going. The word was that Palmer wanted to leave even before we signed Doku, so it was kind of like he had his mind made up. And look, that's fair enough. You can't hold a player back who doesn't want to stay. But in terms of the right-back position, hand on heart, I wouldn't be too against Kyle Walker going this summer and chopping it up between Rico, giving him more minutes. You know, you got a Kanji there. You have John Stones there. And whoever else. I mean, I think we're linked with Kimmich. He can play as right back if that was to happen. So I don't think the loss of losing Kyle Walker would be the biggest blow at this stage. That's with all due respect. I've got nothing but admiration and love for Kyle Walker over the last 7 years. But, you know, nature catches up with you eventually.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if City get the Premier League title. It would be a nice time, I reckon, for him to leave, having lifted it, having played a major part in sort of City's recent success, going all the way back to the start of Pep Guardiola's era and the Centurions campaign, etc. It'd be a nice way to tie things up if he left. But that big contract in the summer, maybe that contract is there to protect City and make sure that they get some money out of him. Should he leave this summer? Should he leave next summer? I don't know. I think it was 3 years, wasn't it, last season? Okay, this is the last question. It's a little bit more of a fun one. It comes from Layla. They've asked us, if we could sign one big money superstar this summer and it didn't matter about the cost, so it could cost £300 million, for example, you know, whatever, blank check, go off, oh, go and get it. Who would it be? The only catch, though, is that is the only player City can make a signing for all summer. So City can bring in one player, big money, sort of, you know, we're talking Mbappe, Harry Kane, Bellingham, Vinny, you know, all those names that any player in world football, doesn't matter the cost, that's the only player they can sign this summer. Where do you think City need to plug the gap? That's a great question, by the way.
Ooh, that's a really good question. And I have two answers, and they're both kind of two different reasonings behind them. One is just total fantasy that I would absolutely love this player. I think, you know, if you had to guess, who am I going to say? I think I gave you a hint earlier on today.
Yeah. You just got a shirt with the name on the back, didn't you? Vinny Jr.
Yeah, Vinicius, man. I love Vinicius. I think he's just that type of winger that I love. Electric, you know, goals. He's got personality. He's character. I love that about him. It's never going to happen, but Vinicius, yeah. And then my second one, I think there's a bit more reality to it. And it would plug a hole at Manchester City that's required right now. Same club, I think Tchouaméni. I think Tchouaméni at Real Madrid would be a fantastic, fantastic acquisition for Manchester City. And the reason I believe there's a bit more reality to it is because I'm not sure where he's going to get consistent minutes at Real Madrid over the course of the next few years. You know, with Camavinga, with Bellingham, with Valverde, with even Kroos and Modric are still there. I know he's playing a bit at centre half this season, but he wants to be further forward, Tchouaméni. That's where he wants to be. He wants to be around the six, around the eight. He can play as an eight. I think he has that Pep versatility. I think he has the experience now. French international. I would love Tchouaméni. He could probably play in a pivot beside Rodri, could take minutes off Rodri to rest Rodri as a six. He'd be the dream to plug the hole, as you say. Yeah, I don't know what you think about Tchouaméni.
Yeah, Tchouaméni's great. It was a little bit annoying that City didn't capitalize on his absence in the second leg. Obviously, Nacho came in and did a decent job on Haaland, but I felt like he is one of the guys for Real Madrid. He's been absolutely fantastic. He scores wonder goals as well. I think he got a recent one against Mallorca in between the City games where he sort of picked it up from about 30 yards out and rifled it into the top corner. I'm just looking at sort of a list of best players in Europe, and I'm going to go back to last summer. And I'm going to say Declan Rice, because I think City have the Premier League title wrapped up right now had they got Declan Rice. I felt it at the time. It was one of those players where City were sort of, you could see they wanted him, but they didn't necessarily want to go into an arms race with Arsenal, and they were putting up big dollar, and Arsenal needed him. Don't get me wrong, City didn't necessarily need him, but you speak about a player who can take minutes off Rodri, he could do that. But we've also seen him play a little bit more advanced, obviously behind Jorginho, behind Thomas Partey at Arsenal. So I think he would be the guy who would sort of, who would have been, I think we're celebrating four in a row right now if Declan Rice had joined City in the summer.
Yeah, I've said that as well on shows with Arsenal fans, and it gets them very giddy. You know, that we got one over on you, and you know, we got a player that City wanted, this player, and we got him, as if that's a trophy. But I can't disagree. I can't disagree. I think Declan Rice would have, his addition to the squad, as you say, would have probably won us four in a row by now. Because something that we have struggled with is fatigue and with injuries and plugging holes, putting, you know, square pegs in round holes, as you say, a few times throughout the season. He would have just been the perfect addition. But that's why I said Tchouaméni. I view Tchouaméni as the French kind of Declan Rice. You know what I mean? Because we're never going to get Declan Rice. He's kind of probably settled at Arsenal. But I think there's more reality to Tchouaméni at some point, maybe. I don't know how he feels about having a squad role at Real Madrid, but either of them, man, either of them, they're both absolutely terrific players. If we can get a player of that quality in to join Rodri, in to join the squad, it makes us a real, real powerhouse. But look, we're linked with players like, you know, Bruno Guimaraes, who I like. The word was that if City got their hands on Paqueta, they believe in a bit of coaching, he could play in a deeper role and help out in that front as well. I'm sure the club will get it right, man. I'm sure the club will get it right. The recruitment's always been pretty good, so we'll wait and see on that one.
Yeah, it does feel like it's going to be an interesting summer transfer window, especially with spending cap rules coming into place the following transfer window. So that could be something to watch. Maybe we have a massive blowout and spend £300 million on Tchouaméni. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But Hugh, we'll call it a day there. Thank you very much. You want to do the usual plug in your show where we can find you? Like I say, always worth a watch. HMTV on YouTube.
Yeah, plugging away now full time on my personal channel. I'm no longer with City Extra, so I'm on my personal journey. HMTV, or just type in HMTV 1894 on YouTube, and I'll be the first one there. So, yeah, all this support is appreciated. Big thank you to you on the City Report podcast for having me on, as always. We'll definitely do it again sometime soon, man.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. Wonderful stuff, as usual. Links in the description. Listeners, thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow, but until then, it's been a pleasure, and we'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.